It is time once again for a look at the pages of the Lakeville Journal and occasionally the Millerton News. We have John Constant with us. I guess I can make the little announcement. We're going to bring in the Millerton News on a regular basis. And instead of calling it just This Week in the Lakeville Journal, we'll call it This Week in the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News. And we're shooting to start that next week, John. I think it's good because it opens up a whole bunch of stories to the people that reside on the other side of the border.
That's right. And people go back and forth on that border all the time.
It's unlike when I lived in Kingston, and they were Kingston and Rhinebeck were side by side, but they had the Hudson River between them. There's nothing between except name changes between our state lines. So that'll be fun and good to start next week. Well, we'll start off with the front page of the Lakeville Journal and the Office of Health Strategy public hearing, which was some tough questions that were put before New Vance.
Right. This is chapter whatever of the New Vance attempt to do a transformation of its services, both labor and delivery and intensive care. So this one is, you know, the second part of a hearing on the intensive care change, where they want to change the intensive care unit and combine it with the medical surgery unit and put them together in one place. In this case, there was a hearing officer who really asked questions of Don Murphy, the CEO of New Vance, and Christina McCulloch, the president of Sharon Hospital, and Dr. Mark Marshall, who is the VP of Medical Affairs. And they really wanted to know, you know, some specific things like, you know, when Sharon Hospital last provided the kind of ICU level of care on a consistent basis. So they've asked for the hospital to come back to them with some answers on some questions by March 17th. It seems as though this hearing is sort of marching toward a conclusion at some point. Not sure when that will be, but Riley Klein has done a nice job of summarizing that hearing. And then on Monday night this week, New Vance held a state-mandated forum with the public to hear how it's complying with all of the requirements of its certificate of need application. So this was a chance for the public to ask some questions, but it was very lightly attended on Monday night.
All right. Interesting picture on the front page of the Lakeville Journal, and 40 fire chiefs reunited at a gathering that was put together by the Lakeville Hose Company chief.
Yes, Donnie Reed, who was the chief at one point of the Lakeville Hose Company, has been trying for a couple of years now to get all the past fire chiefs and current fire chiefs together. They all, of course, come together whenever there's an emergency, and they all know each other. So this is great because it spanned both New York and Connecticut and Massachusetts. They all met at the Canaan Country Club and posed for a really strong, impactful photo of all these guys together at once. There were, I think, I'm correct, I think there were 43 eligible to come to this, and 40 of them made it. So it's a really fantastic photograph.
Yeah, it says a lot about volunteerism here in our tri-state region. No doubt about that. It's something, a story that we've been following on the radio station through statewide coverage and national coverage, especially in New York State, where it's actually in the courts, and you've got a story on nursing homes opposing proposed staffing mandates. As I said, in New York State, it's in the courts already, and in Connecticut, I'm pretty sure it's going to do the same route.
Yeah, this is a bill. It's called SB number 989. It's in Hartford. There have been hearings on it. A lot of opposition to the idea that mandated staffing levels are just not doable given the labor situation. The bill calls for spending from three, instead of 3 hours per resident, 4.1 hours per resident on a nursing ratio. And we talked to, of course, all the nursing home administrators up here in the Northwest corner at Noble, at Gear, at the Sharon Health Center. And they really just say, basically, this is not doable. The workers are simply not there. But Deborah Alexenis does a really nice job of looking at both the local situation and nationally. So it's a good story to read.
What's interesting is when I was in the hospital for 5 days getting this test, I spent the first day in the emergency room, and I spoke to the nurses there. In the emergency room, the nursing and the staff, it's a 25-to-1 ratio, 25 patients to one nurse. When you get checked into the hospital, it's a little bit better, 14 patients to one. Mm-hmm. But that shows the staffing shortage. I mean, I sat in a hallway in a bed for almost 7.5 hours to be seen by the nurses in the emergency room. And so it's a problem that runs not only in the nursing home, but also in hospitals as well. And it's tough, especially out here. You have that problem in Hartford. Just imagine how tough it is, because you don't have the staffing, the same amount of people to staff out here in the Netherlands.
Right. Yes.
All right. Another story that's right on the front page, it deals with health, and that is seasonal affective disorder is now more prevalent. They figured it out in northern climes.
Yes, this is a story by a new writer for us, Isabel Clark. She is writing about mental health for us, and this is a look at something we all know about. It's essentially, it's called SAD, but it's seasonal affective disorder, and it really affects people in the northern latitudes more than in the southern latitudes. We point out that, for example, in New Hampshire, the rate is about 9% of the population for people who suffer from this, and compared to Florida, which is under 2%, the Sunshine State. So the symptoms are, you know, having a sad mood, being lethargic, having a hard time concentrating. And the story interviews the psychiatrist at, you know, his name is Dr. Sabu Mubashar from Sharon Hospital, and he has treated seasonal affective disorder for a long time. So he just gives you sort of a look at what the symptoms are, what the theories are behind it. A lot of it has to do with exposure to light in terms of what precipitates this. But then there's also other things that people consider, such as genetic makeup, whether your neurotransmitters are doing the same as they do for somebody else. And then there's also this whole thing about getting vitamin treatments like vitamin D. So it's an interesting story. Well done by Isabel Clark.
Once again, you have a cooperative effort with the Connecticut Mirror. And this is a pretty important story, really, that lead paint is suddenly falling off state's bridges.
Yeah, this is a story. Why am I laughing? But apparently the temperature swings, recent temperature swings, may be behind this. All of a sudden, the DOT started finding, you know, lead paint was cracking and falling off hundreds of bridges. And so they suspect that these paint chips do contain lead. So they immediately got on the case and are looking at all the bridges in the state, more than 2,000 of them, and they're cleaning it up. So this is a kind of an unusual story, that we're always thinking about lead paint in old apartment buildings, but now we have lead paint coming off our bridges.
All right. A story by in the page A2, a documentary which portrays the agriculture in our region.
Yes, I like this story. This is coming out of Pine Plains on Saturday, coming up at 4 o'clock at the Stissing Center. There'll be a documentary film, Our Farms, Our Farmers. And it's really a series of interviews with local farmers, and comes out of a project started by the Little Nine Partners Historical Society and the vice president of that group. is the daughter of Ron Osofsky, who was a very big farmer over at Ronnybrook Farm. And she sort of says in this story, she laments the fact that she didn't get a chance to really fully interview her father on some subjects. So that was part motivation for making this film.
You know, I turned on my computer early this morning, and up in front of me on my calendar popped Women's History Month. And I didn't even know about Women's History Month. And when I looked at the paper today, I said, you have a story about what's going on at the D.M. Hunt Library to celebrate Women's History Month.
Yes, it's a scavenger hunt in honor of Women's History Month. And everybody can go over and pick up a scavenger hunt, kit, so to speak, at the library and travel around downtown Falls Village looking for answers to various historical clues. So it's a very nice way of celebrating an event for women's history and getting people together to do things.
All right. You also have a story. And this reminds me as to what running for office used to be like. In Falls Village, the first selectman, Henry Todd, is not going to seek re-election. He's done his part where he's served his town, and it's time for him to move on.
Well, he is. This is his. It would be his third term is completing. It would be a fourth term, and he's decided to spend more time in France where his son lives. He and his wife are not planning to leave town or anything like that, but. He's citing in this story what has transpired over his terms, and he's just going to not going to run again. We have a sweet photo of him wearing a pretty nice green jacket, giving an award to a Kellogg School commencement in June last June. So his advice for anybody to do this is. Patience and don't let yourself get riled up.
Talk about seasonal disorder. Being a first selectman nowadays, I think that's a seasonal disorder on its own.
Right.
A nice picture and story on Lake Warramug Run, and it's a new look.
Yeah, they changed the route. This is the 38th time for this race, It passes through Kent, Warren, and Washington, and it benefits the Guiding Eyes for the Blind, an organization that trains and provides dogs for impaired individuals. And there were 575 runners, and believe it or not, it didn't look too warm out there. It was in the 30s, but they all got out there and did it, and we have a sort of a nice photo of them running downhill. But at the end of the race, it's pretty much uphill.
All right. A couple stories about herbicides. We'll go to Kent first. And the selectmen there are now going to take a look at that issue in Kent.
Yes, they are. They're worried about leaching into groundwater when the Housatonic Railroad Company sprays alongside its tracks to keep the weeds down. And they do it along the railroad track beds. In some places, like Cornwall, which is another story on this in this paper, there's some concern that they've lost some trees and some notably some white pines as a result of the leaching. So there is an attempt here to reach out to. We're unable to reach out to the railroad. We're going to continue to follow up with them, but this story also. Surfaced in Cornwall, where they're concerned about spraying and herbicides alongside the railroad tracks. So we're following up on this. It's if you get near a railroad track and you look at the spraying, you can see clearly that they have to keep this down. But I guess the question is, do they follow the same kind of controls in Connecticut that they follow in Massachusetts?
Well, it's interesting to look at it because this is a problem that has surfaced over many, many, many years in Cornwall, which it's not only the spraying of the herbicides, how the overspraying kills plants on people's property, and when they initially did the clearing to bring the railroad back. And your story raises concerns once again over the railroad spraying in Cornwall. And like I said, this has been a long running story ever since really the Housatonic Railroad started running trains again.
Yeah, and this one of the stories ends by pointing out that the Kent Conservation Commission is going to reach out to the five other area towns to see if they can't all kind of join together to work out something.
Well, when you ride on River Road in Cornwall and you ride by the railroad tracks, you see how far the herbicides go off and into people's lands. Mm-hmm. So it is a problem that has to be looked at. And sooner or later, the railroad's got to do something to come forward to please people. Now, this is a good time to talk about affordable housing, because in Salisbury, you have the Holly, that building can now move forward without litigation. You've got, of course, the property that's been donated for housing. Salisbury right now seems to be at a big time push whether they might add anywhere up to 60 units over the next several years of affordable housing.
Yes, this is a really big initiative in Salisbury, as we all know. And in this story, we have a story from Deborah Alex Ennis about one house on Main Street. It's on the north side of Route 44. If you're driving into town, and you'll see that there was a dumpster out front and they've been working on it. And this is a story about contractors who kind of came together using their time and some pretty favorable estimates and experience to work on a house that is going to be put together for as affordable housing. It's a two bath, three bedroom, two story home, and it was sold and purchased, you know, to be renovated and then resold for affordable housing. So they still need about $90,000 to complete the renovation, but so far the story is letting you know they've completed the kitchen, leveled the floors, done some work up in the attic. It's definitely a nice story to read about how everybody comes together to try to make something work.
All right. A friend of mine who I've known for many years and who's worked on me off and on for many years, Mike Mangini, who we all know is a physical therapist at GEAR. Of course, he was let go several months ago. He has been looking for space and finally has found it in the center of North Canaan.
Right. He's well known by, you know, many, many, many people. And he was the founding director of outpatient therapy at GEAR. When GEAR went through a change that required them to reduce some operations, he had to go, and he has, as you say, he's found it's 10 Railroad Street in Canaan, North Canaan, and it's a property owned by John Considine, who has done quite a bit of work on it. It's a very attractive building at this point, and this story takes a look by our Cynthia Hawkswender, who came back for a cameo appearance to write this story. We're very happy about that. So it's not just the technique, but also the way you diagnose problems. And I don't need to go into detail. Those who have used Mike Mangini know how it works. So we just wanted to let everybody know where he was.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think because we wrote about him when he left.
That's right. And people really, really did miss him. And it's nice to see him back. A couple of obituaries that caught my eye, and especially over the line in Millerton, New York, Bernie Silvernail passed away at the age of 90. Someone who has been involved in the community lifestyle in Millerton for a long, 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 long time.
Yes. Bernie's role, it was a huge part of the Millerton community. He also had a wonderful sense of humor, but he was very involved in any number of things. The town Republican committee, he coached minor league, little league, Babe Ruth league. He wrote a column for the Lakeville Journal and the Millerton News called the History Column. So he really is a big personality. He was parade marshal, you name it. And also the fire department company Jokester. So he is going to be missed.
All right. Right alongside of that, a nice picture, but the stories on the Sharon Women's Club welcoming local artists. We'll go into that story.
Yeah, this was this happened earlier this month. The Sharon Women's Club, which is now 112 years old or entering its 112th year, really sponsors educational opportunities and programs and scholarships for the area. And this time they invited Peter Lefferts, who is a career artist and author. And he talked about his new book for children, What the KK Saw. And it's basically recalling his own experience as a third grader. But this is a great story by Leela Hawken, looking at both the women's club and what it does, as well as what, Peter Lefferts has to offer in terms of his work.
Okay, we'll come back to Compass in just a few moments, but we'll go to the opinion and letters to the editor pages. We'll start off with your editorial, The Library Venue, A Place Where We All Belong.
Yes, I think this is takes a look at how libraries are so central to our life these days. Not only are they places where people go to read books and check out CDs and get on a computer and stream movies and you name it, but they also have become sort of almost a de facto public forum, in a sense where this editorial points out that in the Northeast Millerton Library last week, there was a big housing expo. In the Pine Plains Library, the couple of weeks before that, there was in the community room, there was a big meeting on a community solar project. Save Sharon Hospital uses libraries to hold its roundtables. And that there are 17, public libraries in Litchfield County and 26 in Dutchess County. So they're everywhere. So it's basically just taking a look at how libraries have become really central to our life.
Yeah, it's been that way. I got my first library card at the Hoshkus Library in Sharon when I was at Sharon Center School. I'm 70 years old, so you can figure out how long that the libraries have been important. And they're even more important now in today's computerized age. And we're lucky to have, we have just some world-class small libraries in our area. We're very, very lucky. I was looking at your letters to the editor, and I love the fact that so many people participate. And one of the letters actually asks the question of the Lakeville Journal, why print somebody's letter if it's full of this and that and that? And that person that the person was talking about has a rebuttal letter himself. Well, I think you print people's letters. Everybody has an opinion, and by accepting the letters you accept, if somebody says something that is akin to what somebody believes, they have the right to write in and point that out.
That's correct. I mean, we, of course, Janet Manco was extremely rigorous, and as we will continue to be, about making sure that there's nothing in a letter that is really way off the track and misleading or wrong. But if somebody has an opinion and they want to state it in a letter, we will print that opinion. So we do end up getting into these crosstalk matches at times over one opinion differs from another, and then they start fighting over it in the paper. But we feel very strongly that the paper should be open to anybody to express their views.
All right. And a very interesting letter on Troutbeck's story, talking about the latest chapter of Troutbeck.
Yes, this is essentially one that looks at hoping that Troutbeck remains, preserved for centuries to come in the way that it was before. And this is by Marion Payton. And then her husband wrote a poem, which follows her letter. So we have not only a letter, but a poem saluting Troutbeck and what it could be, and hoping to keep the excavators away.
And a couple of letters, which is, this is great. One giving thanks to the Sharon Hospital staff for the work they did, by Carl Saller. And a thank you to you and your review of what the story on the Housatonic Meadows State Park.
Yes. Well, again, this is more volunteerism. They are stepping up and following up with, you know, what happened at that park and trying to renovate it and bring it back. Similarly, when someone has a really positive and wonderful experience at Sharon Hospital, and that was in the ER room, ER department, it's really important, because people go around thinking that somehow Sharon Hospital is going to close. That is an issue that we've come across. But here we go. Somebody's writing about what a good time they had, what a good experience. That's Carl Solitaire from Cornwall Bridge.
And before we go to Compass, a recital that goes on every year around here, and I've seen many of them, and that is the student open recital with students from our area. And you have a nice story on that, and even a picture.
Yes, this is a recital that was covered by Matthew Creda, who has covered music for us. He has a musical education, and he does a really beautiful job. It's almost a dream to just read his stories, because they describe the music in a way that, as you know, music is sort of this ineffable thing, but he does a beautiful job. And this is a recital that happened last Sunday. And it was, you know, open to students from kindergarten through high school, and features official school ensembles as well as those from private instructors. So we have a nice photo of an ensemble performing Bach.
All right. And in Compass, you lead off Compass with two great stories that are connected, and that is the fight for animal survival in the zoos in the Ukraine, and the fact that locally over $100,000 has been raised by some art auctions locally for Ukraine.
Yes, this is by Emily Edelman, who you're talking about the art auction. She attended last Sunday at Troutbeck, where Andre Wolodar and his wife Kim Schmidt Wolodar are. Andre's father lives in Poland, and they are really dedicated to helping Ukraine. And this was also not only a great event with more than 200 people, but there were lots of packages auctioned off from Hammertown, from a chef, Matthew Lodes, from Edward Acker Photography. There was a Bard College grad student playing Ukrainian bandura. And then, as you mentioned before, there was this interview by Alex Wilburn of a Falls Village film director, Joshua Zeman, really telling about what happened when the Echo Park in Kharkiv in Ukraine was under siege by bombardment, and how they got all the animals out. And that film is actually, he's going to be talking about that film in the Falls Village Hunt Library.
So these are just some of the stories that we've gone over in the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News. Of course, the papers are available for pickup throughout many places in the tri-state region, also delivered to your house by mail, and delivered to your house or business via their digital platform, which I pick up a copy of the paper, and I also am a member of the digital platform. So you can find that at tricornernews.com. Well, John, once again, we'll speak to you next week, and we'll have hopefully Emily join us, and we'll start a new direction with the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News on the air.
Thank you very much, Marshall.